Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
That is Sean Kenny in for Game On. Welcome on in. In for Hugh Cahill. And we will have in studio, in fact, he's sitting in front of me, Shane Keegan, the former Galway United manager, now turned journalist. Good evening to you, Shane.
How are you, Johnny?
Good, yeah. To beat the traffic to get in here.
Tough going, jumping from lane to lane there. But we got here.
Great. And we're here till 7 o'clock. We've been hearing from Tony O'Donoghue. He's watching Dundalk against Slovan Bratislava. That's not taking place in Dundalk. The ground's not deemed fit for this round of the Europa League, so they're playing it in Tala. Talking to Tony very shortly. That game kicking off at 8 o'clock tonight. Talking to Mark Langdon about European football, the start of a couple of major leagues across Europe, La Liga and the Bundesliga, but also Manchester City have avoided a transfer ban. Give us your thoughts. Text 51552, 51552. The ticket price increase for the All-Ireland final this weekend between Tipperary and Kilkenny. £90 you may have to pay. If you're bringing a family, it could be a hell of a lot more. Let us know your thoughts. 51552, 51552. Eddie Brennan, the former Kilkenny great and now Leash manager, is not happy. We'll hear from him. And also, at the end of the programme, in the last couple of minutes, we'll talk about Captain Slow, Bryson DeChambeau, as we are in the rough with Greg Allen tonight, PGA, to review the pace of play rules. As always, our text line, 51552, that's 51552, or you can get us on Twitter, of course, at GameOn2FM, that's at GameOn2FM. Bit of news to give you to start with. I did mention already that Manchester City have avoided that transfer ban. They've got a ban, obviously, hanging over their head, but they've got a fine, and we talked to Mark Langdon very shortly about that particular fine and how they avoided it, the transfer ban, that is. But news that Sam Bennett, cycling, this is one of the second stage in a row at the Brinkbank Tour. More rain today caused problems with slippery conditions leading to a mass crash on the closing stages, but Bennett kept his composure and timed his sprint move to perfection.
Here comes Sam Bennett, no place for Groenewegen, it's Sam Bennett, makes it back-to-back wins here. Absolutely superb by the Irishman, kept his cool, waited to pour on the power, and when required to do so, he had plenty in reserve.
Yeah, I can't believe it. After 70k, my legs weren't that great, so I didn't expect to really get a result today. But here, the last 10k, you know, the guys looked after me so well all day, kept me at the front, and I think that I was saving so much there, and others were losing so much at the back, that in the end, had enough legs to get the win. But yeah, I'm delighted with that. I really didn't think I could get a second win here.
Well done to Sam Bennett. He holds the overall leader's jersey now. Seven stages on the World Tour event, which ends this coming Sunday. Right, let's turn our attention to the Europa League. It's a 1-0 lead for Slovan Bratislava over Dundalk heading into the second leg. So the tie is nicely poised. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff in Tala. Dundalk have had to move lock, stock and barrel away from Oriel Park because Tala is the place they have to play tonight because their home ground not deemed fit for this particular round of the Europa League. And Gary Rogers, the Dundalk goalkeeper, has been talking about playing in Tala.
Tala has been good to us in the past, so it's no harm to be bringing it back here. It's a place where we've had some great European nights and indeed great nights in the league as well. So we're well familiar with it, and it's great to be playing in the third round of the Europa League in order to try and get into the playoff round.
Talk to me about the first leg. You had an outstanding game, but that, I suppose, showed how under pressure you were for much of it.
Yeah, look, in European games you're always going to have bits and pieces to do, and thankfully made a few saves, but equally so we created opportunities to score, and their keeper made a couple of good saves in the game as well. So look, it's very finely balanced. You know, 1-0 defeat, it's not the worst result you could have had. But equally so, we could have got something out of the game in terms of an away goal. But look, we're bringing it back here. We've been here before, and you know, when it comes to the second leg, you know, anything can happen in them. And with the players that are in our squad and on our bench, you know, we've got game changes all over the place. And I think if some of the players like Jamie Graham, Patrick McElhenney can turn up like that in the best of their form, you know, we've got a real good chance of going through.
That's Guy Rogers there, the veteran Dundalk goalkeeper. Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, is in Tala already. Tony, atmosphere obviously building well. To head of tonight's game. What do you think?
Yeah, Gary Rogers is going to make his 45th European appearance tonight, so he's head and shoulders now ahead of anybody else in the League of Ireland or in Dundalk's ranks with experience, that's for sure, and they definitely needed him in the first leg. He was outstanding, made some great saves, so you could say that he's kept them in the tie, even though it's only 1-0. David Holman, the Hungarian international, scoring with just 4 minutes of normal time remaining on the clock, but that puts Slovan Bratislava in the driving seat. Dundalk have to score at least once if their European run is to continue, if they're not to be eliminated this evening, and that's what they aim to do. Like, speaking to some of the players and Vinnie Perth, the manager, yesterday, the words were saying, coming up all the time, like, the tie is very much in the balance and this is very much a winnable tie, and that's the mindset, that's what they believe, and I think they enjoy playing here, I have to say. It's in great nick, Tala. It's had a bit of rain, a bit of sunshine. It's had the four seasons, really, so far. And people were just reminding me that famous game against Bate Borisov here in 2016, 3 years ago, that helped them get through to the Europa League group stages. Well, the rain was teeming down that night, and they came through with a 3-0 win, which is a huge result and a great night. And they'll need something similar this evening if they are hoping to go through to the playoff round. Remember, they'll play the loser of the Ajax versus Pauk game. That game stands poised at 2-2. The loser of that game will play the winner tonight, next Thursday, hopefully here in Tala. They'll be playing either Pauk or Ajax to go through to the group stages of the Europa League. That's the dream, of course. That's where all the money is, that's where the glory is, and they're certainly in it, there's no question about that, as this is definitely a winnable tie.
Yeah, that Ajax-Pauk game is on tonight, by the way, the second leg. Shane Keegan, you mentioned, is in studio with me, now turned journalist, former Galway United manager. Do you give Dundalk much of a chance?
Yeah, you would. I mean, as Tony has said, you know, Dundalk were very, very thankful for Gary the last day, but at the same time, they did have chances themselves. You know, I think they'd be disappointed not to have got a goal from it, and you can 100% see them getting on the score sheet tonight at least once. As Tony says, the big problem is, you know, you just one slight slip and one goes in the other end, and all of a sudden you're looking for three, and that's got to be the fear, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing with playing in places like Tala, I think it might suit them. That surface might suit them. Coming away from the pitch, the artificial pitch that they play on in Oriel Park.
They've taken to it superbly. I mean, even go back to the last league clash between the two when Dundalk came out and top of that one against Rovers. No, I was at most of their home, if home is the correct word, Hope Group games last year, and the supporters seem to love it, the players seem to love it. I don't think it's any hindrance to them whatsoever on that front.
Yeah, you mentioned Tony Bate Borisov there from 2015, a couple of years ago, where they beat them in Tala to qualify for the Europa League proper. That's what Vinnie Perth is being alluding to, hasn't he? The Dundalk manager saying he wants the spirit of that Bate Borisov performance tonight from his players.
Yeah, and it was the standout performance. But looking back over the last number of years and in the big games, the players who've put their hand up, if you like, and you look at players that they don't have anymore. David McMillan was so important to them. Robbie Benson scored that night in 2016, and unfortunately he's ruled out this evening, as he was in the first leg, with a rib injury. And you look even further back over the years and you see how important Richie Towell or Daryl Horgan was to them, or indeed Kieran Kilduff, and I think they're missing Stephen O'Donnell in the middle of the park as well. I mean, we haven't even spoken of how much of a loss he's been throughout the season, because the results at home, they have got that 7-point lead at the top of the League of Ireland, but as Shane talked about that game against Shamrock Rovers here, they won the game, but they probably didn't deserve it, I think, overall. So the table won't lie at the end of the season, but I'm not sure if Dundalk are firing on all cylinders at the moment, and they need to look for inspiration from somewhere else in the field. And it's the likes of Michael Duffy, Patrick McElhinney, you'll imagine, and Pat Hooban that they'll be looking to try and get goals, because they haven't scored in their last 7 European matches, in fact. So finding the net is the big problem for Dundalk.
Yeah, but Dundalk have been, and Patrick Hooban in particular, has been a prolific goal scorer in the last couple of years. But you take Tony's point that the Dundalk are not particularly firing on all fronts since Stephen Kenny left.
Ah, yeah, well, look, I think they'd have to admit that themselves. But I mean, look, anybody who thought that it was going to be a seamless transition, regardless of who took over from Stephen, I mean, it was going to be impossible to fill that void. And it was always the fact that they're top of the league and looking so commanding in the league is a credit to Vinnie, as is, really, is my own opinion on it. I mean, on the players, as Tony says, there is huge amount of players after disappearing for one reason or another off that side. But all the more reason for it being a night for a different fella to kind of write himself into that pantheon of great names. To me, Jamie McGrath, I know he's probably not 100% assured of his start, but I think he's arguably their most informed player. I think he's potentially he's their Jack Byrne for Rovers, if that makes sense, at the moment, and I think he could be
the one to keep an
eye on tonight, you know.
Yeah,
I think that the point was making, Shane, though, was that, you know, you need at this, it's going to be harder and harder for Irish clubs, perhaps an impossible mountain to climb, to make it to group stages of either the Champions League or indeed the Europa League, and I think you're going to compete with the bigger boys. And you look at the opposition that Dundalk have faced so far in Riga and in the Azerbaijan team Karabag, and now Slovan Bratislava. They've got players from all around the world, and we're looking at a very small playing pool and a very limited playing pool. And I think to compete at this level and to expect to get through at this level against resources that are much, much deeper than yours is almost an impossible ask.
It is. It certainly is. And I mean, on their side, just is there any team news coming out of it, Tony? I know there was some doubts over. I won't even try and pronounce his name, but the Moroccan winger, he was really impressive the last day. There seemed to be some kind of doubt that he mightn't be involved tonight.
There's some doubt, but we've not. It's a bit early because it's an 8 o'clock kickoff. It's a bit early for team news. But also David Holman, the Hungarian international who scored in the 86th minute over there, he was rated doubtful as well. Although he did take part in training here last night, but he came off in the game on Saturday, the league game, and he was very good. He's someone that really tested them as well, so they'll be hoping that goes in their favour. I think they need all the stars to align tonight. I think they need big performances from big players, and the team that Vinnie Perth and John Gill will select tonight will be very interesting. Will they go back to Sean Hoare, surprisingly left on the bench in Bratislava? Patrick McElhenney didn't start, Benson we mentioned was injured so couldn't, but even Brian Gartland hasn't had a look in this season really in Europe, so you know, it's a big night, I've been saying, for McElhenney, but he may not even start the game. It's a big night for McGrath, as you point out. Michael Duffy, of course, famously missed the game in Riga because his partner was expecting. But we're now expecting from Michael Duffy because we need him to step up and give us a big performance and a big goal tonight.
All right, Tony, look, we'll let you go because I know you got some other commitments. That's Tony O'Donoghue there, the soccer correspondent from RTE. The game kicks off at 8 o'clock. If you're around the area, do your best self a favour and go up and see some European football. Dundalk against Slovan kicking off at 8 o'clock tonight. I'm going to pop up. Shane are going up actually to that game after this programme, so I'm looking forward to it tonight. I have to say, I'm a League of Ireland fan, and obviously you're a former League of Ireland manager. When League of Ireland clubs start playing in Europe, I'm a Shell supporter, but I roar on Dundalk, I roar on Shamrock Rovers. I never thought I'd say that, but you do. I mean, you get behind the League of Ireland clubs, and it's great that League of Ireland fans, whoever they support, should get behind
I think there was kind of a big social media discussion around all that this week, wasn't it? Some saying that they are in favour of shouting for opposition teams, others are vehemently against it, and
is their right too.
Absolutely.
If you don't want to support, that's fine.
100%. And look, I think there's a bit of crack to be knocked out of it one way or another. But look, I suppose from a, if I can call myself a neutral, I'm from Leash. There's no League of Ireland teams in Leash. I'm about as neutral as you can get. But yeah, I think, look, there's no doubt. I think more worrying is, John, it'd be terrible disappointing if we were left with no European football after tonight. You know, it would be quite early for everybody to be gone when you're looking at Rovers and Dundalk, and you're thinking, you know, they're two very good sides who could make that breakthrough. We really, really would love to get a bit more of a run out of it if Dundalk can pull out that result.
Okay, so come on, Dundalk.
Yes,
all right,
indeed.
So kicking off at 8 o'clock tonight. Updates on 2FM throughout the evening. Good results, by the way, to give you from the Women's Champions League. Unfortunately, Wexford Youths can't qualify, but they won their second game in a row. And oh, what win it was, too, beating Birkir Kara FC by 7-2. So 2 wins out of 2, but they finished second in the group, can't qualify. But that was a terrific result, 7-2 for them. Now, Manchester City have avoided a transfer ban after admitting breaching FIFA rules on signing youth players. The Premier League champions have been fined around €315,000 instead. FIFA said City breached Article 19 of its regulations. International transfers of players are only permitted if the player is over the age of 18. And normally we have on a Tuesday Mark Langdon from the Racing Post, the football editor of the Racing Post, to talk about European football. He's on the line now to talk about this particular finding. What do you make to it all, Mark?
I think first of all, I've seen a lot of Chelsea fans already getting very angry over this because, Chelsea, of course, are currently seeing out a transfer ban, and you know we saw what happened to them at Old Trafford on Sunday with that 4-0 defeat without Eden Hazard and being able to reinforce their squad. This is slightly different. Manchester City, it was only two players. Now, you could say that was too many in terms of registering and playing underage players, but it was seen as a minor offence compared to Chelsea, who had racked up a considerable amount more than that. The fine, of course, is absolutely nothing to Manchester City, but it kind of just falls
for a player. Yeah,
but it falls into line with kind of just FIFA regulations. You know, they can't. They can't raise the fine because Manchester City are, you know, richer than other clubs. That's just not how they work. And so it always looks a small amount when it falls down on a Manchester City or, you know, if it were to be Real Madrid. But it has to be, you know, it has to be fair because you couldn't sort of say you put it at 30 million and then fine Fenerbahce 30 million if they did the same thing. And, you know, it would really seriously harm their business. So I don't think it's the biggest crime ever committed in football. I think that the fact that City owned up to it quickly, the fact that it was only a minor breach, I think suggests a fine is fair. The bigger concern, I think, for Manchester City is in the next month or so, we should find out whether they're going to be banned from the Champions League. Of course,
yeah, that's
a
bigger one coming down the line, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. To do with the alleged sort of cooking of the books in terms of beating financial fair play. Of course, it was in Der Spiegel and a big investigation into that. So we'll wait and see. But I think that was always the one that Manchester City were fearing probably more than this one.
OK, let's move it on to the start of two of the big leagues across Europe this weekend, the Bundesliga. First, talk about La Liga. Barcelona, they've got their man, Antoine Griezmann. Are Real Madrid up to the task? They look a little bit in tatters, even though they got Eden Hazard in their lineup now and Luka Jovic from Frankfurt. Remains to be seen, though, how they will settle in at the Bernabeu. But is it Barcelona's to lose, do you think?
I think it is. I mean, Barcelona have dominated the sort of Spanish title race in recent years. Of course, Real Madrid have had the upper hand when it comes to Champions League success. But that kind of just consistency that Barcelona have got, and you mentioned they're bringing in Griezmann as well. They're just able to score so many goals and win so many matches. And that's Messi, Suarez and Griezmann likely to be the front three. Ousmane Dembele can come into that position if they want to rotate one of the front three. They've got Philippe Coutinho still on the books as well. So I think that's where...
Let's talk about him going to Bayern Munich, perhaps?
Yeah, there has been a suggestion of that, although Bayern Munich's signing of Ivan Perisic today from Inter Milan maybe sort of covers them now, that they were obviously being very strongly linked with Leroy Sané. He did his ACL, so they had to look elsewhere. Maybe there would still be an opportunity for Coutinho to leave if Barcelona can get Neymar. That sort of, it's still rambling on that will Barcelona get Neymar. They are pushing very hard for him. They've offered Coutinho to Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain want a lot more money than what Barcelona are currently prepared to offer. But if they could get Neymar, and I know he brings a lot of issues and problems, or he certainly did in Paris, but you look at that front line, if you add Neymar into the equation as well, I mean, it's absolutely sensational sort of list of names on paper. Yeah, absolutely. And Frankie de Jong, you know, one of the most impressive young midfielders from last season's Champions League, he's gone in there as well to sort of strengthen them alongside Sergio Busquets. Maybe there's an issue defensively, but you could also say the same about Real Madrid. They've been absolutely hopeless in pre-season. I know it's only pre-season, but they were humiliated by their old rivals, Atletico. Just pages and pages of editorial dedicated to their woeful pre-season results. They can't keep clean sheets. It's the same midfield at the moment. Casemiro, Modric and Toni Kroos, once the dominant force in European football, they're being run all over at the moment, just haven't got the fitness to be able to play the sort of high-energy game. Eden Hazard hasn't done it yet. He arrived in Madrid overweight, which won't surprise, I don't think, anybody that sort of saw him at Chelsea. So he's not the best trainer, I think it's fair to say, Hazard. He tends to leave all his best work until he's actually playing matches. So I've got no problem that he'll get to where he needs to be for Real Madrid. But defensively and in midfield, it's the same problems that they've had for the last couple of years. And they look very vulnerable at the moment. I think they need to go in the market and get one more big player. I'm not quite sure who that is. Maybe an Eriksen or maybe a Pogba, but I would say that's sort of running out now. Time to get Pogba. But they're definitely, despite spending a lot of money, they look sort of short of Barcelona's quality and strength in depth in the key positions.
As a Spurs fan, Mark, Eriksen was the name I was going to throw at you. Has that talk kind of died down? Do they look like they're shying away from him at this stage?
It's not dying down, unfortunately, in Spain. It looks like Zinedine Zidane had given Real Madrid a list of players he wanted. At the top of that list, or certainly maybe after Eden Hazard, was Paul Pogba. It's such an expensive deal. I think they have tried to get him from Manchester United, but maybe not tried as hard as what Zinedine Zidane would have wanted. They're now going through the list of, you know, the second choice and third choice and so on. And this is where Eriksen finds himself. Van de Beek, who another one who impressed for Ajax last season. Contact has been made with him, but the Ajax manager Ten Hag said earlier this week that he expects the midfielder to stay at Ajax for one more year, which maybe would then open up the possibility for Eriksen, who's also been linked with Atletico Madrid as well, although they've just on the verge of spending a lot of money for Rodrigo, the Valencia forward. So I don't know if that would kind of rule them out. I think it's going to be a nervous couple of weeks for Tottenham. We'll probably be cheering on Van de Beek to go to Real Madrid. If he does, that'll probably open up the possibility of Eriksen staying. But
remind
there
me,
is still
the European deadline is when, Mark?
It's the end of August, but because the end of August falls on a weekend, I think most of the European teams are doing it on that Monday, which is September the 2nd, I believe.
Just don't tell Sky Sports, please.
Yeah. So you basically got until the end of August. So it's an unsettling period for the Premier League teams who have done all their business, can do no more, and now sort of just hoping that you know that they can keep hold of all of their biggest talent.
Are you a fan of Neymar? Shane?
No.
No.
Is anybody a fan of Neymar at this stage? Really?
Well, he's a great footballer.
Yeah, he is when he's focused and when he wants to be a great footballer. Those times seem to be less and less lately, really. You'd be very, very surprised at the likes of Barcelona, particularly when they have the riches that Mark's after kind of outlining there already, why they'd feel the need to take a gamble on bringing a player like that in again who could, you know, unsettle things. I believe he did get on quite
well
with
Real
Messi.
Are in the hunt maybe as well, so...
He would strike you. I mean, personality wise, you would look at Neymar as a fella who would fit in better at a Real than a Barca, based on what you how you'd kind of look at the two clubs over the last decade, you know.
Yeah. In terms of the Bundesliga, then 2012 was the last time a non-Bayern League Bayern Munich team won the Bundesliga, and that was Jürgen Klopp's Borussia Dortmund. Do you think Dortmund might have a chance this year, Mark?
They've definitely got a better chance than they have in recent years. Just quickly going back to Neymar, I think the reason maybe that he would go to Barcelona is the relationship with Messi. Messi's very good friends with him and is pushing for that. But getting back to the Bundesliga, if there's to be a sort of shock in any of the kind of European leagues of the established champions that seem to be winning it year on year, I think this is probably where we're going to get it. Dortmund took the title race to the last day last season, so they don't need to improve that much on what they showed. I think the signing of Mats Hummels from Bayern is absolutely massive. It was expensive. It's not the sort of deal that Dortmund usually do. You know, they buy young progressive players, then sell them on to Bayern Munich. But with this occasion, they've decided they needed experience at the back. So Hummels has come in. I think it was the kind of player they missed last season when they were leading in the title race and then just had to wobble and allowed Bayern to eclipse them. But I think Jadon Sancho's got another year now, so expecting even more from him. There's a real good feeling at Dortmund that they can really push Bayern. I think they've got the better coach in Lucien Favre compared to Kovac at Bayern Munich. And also, Bayern have lost a lot of experience this summer. I mentioned Hummels going to Dortmund. Robin and Ribery, yes, their kind of influence on the pitch was on the wane, but I think in the dressing room, that kind of mentality that they've got, the standards that they set every single day, that's really difficult to replace, that kind of calibre of quality that they've lost there. And they haven't quite done enough, I don't think, in the forward positions in the transfer market. You know, Sané got injured, they were saving a lot of money up to buy him, and then that kind of fell away at the end. Perisic is, I mean, he's a decent player from Inter, but I don't think he was the standard that they were looking for initially. He was sort of a bit of a panic buy, late on in the window when Sané fell through. So definitely Bayern are more vulnerable than, say, a Paris Saint-Germain or probably even a Juventus in their respective league. So watch this space. Dortmund could give it a really good go.
Yeah, well, nice to see somebody challenge Bayern Munich. The French league's underway, isn't Ligue 1, hasn't it? That got underway last weekend.
It did, yeah. You won't be surprised to know that Paris Saint-Germain started with a wide margin victory over Nîmes. It was probably the biggest sort of highlight, if you like, was the crowd reaction to Neymar. There were a lot of banners in the crowd. I won't be able to say exactly what they said, but it's fair to say they don't want to see him in Paris anymore. In fact, one fan group called him the most disgusting player to have ever played for PSG, which I think tells you where the fans are at there. Cesc Fabregas was sent off after a VAR incident in Monaco's defeat against Lyon. I thought it was a red card. There's been a lot of debate as to whether it was an accident or whether he meant to rake the studs down the legs of an opponent. I felt there was enough opportunity for him to kind of move his foot out of the way. He decided not to. The yellow card was upgraded to a red card, and it was a really good start for Lyon. If you think that Lyon lost Ferland Mendy to Real Madrid for nearly 50 million and Ndombele, who scored for Tottenham, was a 60 million pound player, so that they've lost a lot of players. Fekir went to Real Betis, and for them to start with such a convincing win away to Monaco at least bodes well for their I suppose it's a forlorn chase against Paris Saint-Germain, but they started well under their new boss Silvinho, who listeners may remember from his time at Arsenal, the Brazilian left back. He's the manager, and sporting director is Janinho, the guy that used to take all those brilliant free kicks for Lyon when they were sort of riding high in the Champions League and winning the French title year after year.
All right, a quick word about the Super Cup, Chelsea against Liverpool.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is probably not the right game at the right time for Frank Lampard after getting an absolute thrashing against United on Sunday. I think the Super Cup, I would put it sort of on the level of, say, the Community Shield. It's a nice one to win. If you don't win, you're not going to start crying at the fact that you've lost. But it's probably a bigger game for Chelsea, just purely because, if they were to take another beating against a big team, it would sort of, I think it would just start to make people feel a little bit nervous about Frank Lampard. And they've also got a really tricky game in the Premier League coming up, haven't they, against Leicester, one of those that, you expected to win, but you might not. And so I think he probably needs this more than Jurgen Klopp. But Liverpool, definite favourites, and I expect them to win.
All right, Mark, thanks for joining us. That's Mark Landon there, the football editor of the Racing Post. The GAA is defending its decision to hike the price of All-Ireland final stand tickets to a record €90 and has insisted there's no plans for further increase. We'll be discussing that after this.
Tweets at GameOn2FM.
Oh, you can text us 51552. That's 51552. Leading into the break, mentioned the fact that GAA is defending its decision to hike the price of all Ireland final stand tickets, the stand tickets, to a record €90. That's insisted there's no plans for further increase. But the Laois hurling manager, Eddie Brennan, speaking earlier on today across on RT Radio 1 with Miriam O'Callaghan, had this to say.
You know, I suppose the example I'm going to use is maybe, you know, going to the Aviva to a rugby match where you have three or four different categories, and if you want to pay for a really good ticket, then you go and pay for that good ticket and you get a good location. Whereas if you don't want to and you want to bring a young fella, well then, you know, it can be a cheaper day. And I just think, look, we all understand corporate and the finance side of it, and that the profession, the organisation has to be run as such, because it is, you know, there's obviously a huge appeal there. But the reality is we have to cater for the very grassroots, the very people that the GA stands for, and that we use as slogans, you know, to promote the thing and maintain that connect with communities. Like if you have two parents and two kids and you're deciding you're going to go to the All-Ireland, well, then there's the travel, there's the food, and then there's four tickets at €90. So, you know, and the reality is you could pay €90 and be sitting at ground level behind a goal or in the corner and pay the same price to be in the prime location in the middle of the stadium. And look, we understand the All-Ireland finals in hurling and football are the showpiece events. As a paying customer, if you're on your own and you say, yeah, I'd like to go to the All-Ireland, €90 is not bad for the entertainment and the experience you're going to get. And you say, well, I was there the day that Dublin potentially done the drive for five or whatever. But the reality is, you're saying you're depriving, I suppose, kids of maybe 12, 13, 14 or that age group of the opportunity to go to a day like that, simply because parents are going, we just can't afford that. If you're coming from somewhere, you know, the outer reaches of the country, we'll say in Kerry or somewhere like that, and that's just one example, or maybe Waterford or wherever it is, it's an expensive day out to put the four people on the train, to feed them, maybe come up the night before in accommodation. You're looking at a very, very expensive weekend. So all in all, you'd say, look, can we do something? Can we put certain areas or assign certain areas to a lower category or to a family category ticket that you can get it there? And look, absolutely, there's the corporate side of it. And if you want to pay, or any customer for that matter wants to pay, whatever it is, I'm just trying to figure out, maybe €150 to sit slap bang in the middle of the Hogan stand or the Cusick stand where the better seats are, then so be it. That's your prerogative. But definitely, maybe try cater for the kids and the families that are going to all the matches, they're going to the league matches, and they're showing loyalty to their county, and say, look, can we do something here to make it within their reach to go to an All-Ireland final? But the reality is, there's a lot of people go to All-Ireland finals and they're not too pushed, I suppose, really. They're not supporters of counties. And again, they're quite entitled to be there. But I've seen it in some of the corporate boxes where they are no more interested in the match than the man in the moon. The seats left vacated in the corporate box areas and they're inside the veil of the refreshment. And that's okay. That's what they're entitled to do. But I think it's disappointing to see that we have families, you know, kids, be it parents with teenagers around, that say, I can't bring the kids simply because I can't afford that. And again, you sometimes, you know, you say, like I said, the slogan of the GA is always about being all-inclusive and the grassroots and how important that is. And look, you can say there's wider issues. It's just, and again, it's not just making an argument for the sake of it, Miriam. Mm-hmm. I just think it's genuine. I think we're saying, right, you'd love your kids to be there. Like, I mean, I have an eight-year-old at home and he's mad to go to that All-Ireland, and hopefully I can bring him. He's been at one or two of them recently as well. And look, it's great for them, because ultimately what we're about is continuing to sell the organisation, insofar as kids look out on the pitch, they see their heroes and they want to be there, they want to play. So it keeps them going back into their clubs when they go home. And an All-Ireland experience is brilliant for them to sow that seed.
That's Eddie Brennan talking to Mary McCallan earlier on today. Defending the decision, the GA president, John Horne, said it was the first time the cost had been changed since 2011, when it went up by the same price of €10 for the final. And the GA has insisted it had absolutely no plans to increase ticket prices for games in 2020. And 10 years ago, it cost €70 for a stand ticket to the final. No plans to raise them again in the short term. And Alan Milton, the GA communications manager, said, we're a special organisation in that it's an amateur one, which is volunteer-led, so I think the ticket prices compare very favourably to other organisations. You could still bring a child here to see a game at the weekend for €5, and it stays that price up until the final. Shane Keegan, it's just supply and demand, surely.
Yeah, it is, but you can see where Eddie is coming from, really. You know, like, it's you would think there's enough money in the organisation already without them having to find that extra €10 lopped on top of everything else. He's made a few good points, in fairness, as well. Again, I'll hold my hand up and say I've been in corporate boxes. I was in the corporate box for the semi-final, and you look around and there's an awful, awful lot of people, as he says, who just have so little interest. There might be free food provided on the day. There might be even a free drink provided on the day. That's the reason why they're there. And then you are going to have some absolute genuine...
But that's a source of income for the GAA. I mean, OK, everybody sees that at different grounds, at different venues, even at different concerts, right? People are dragged along, whatever, and they stay in the bar. They don't even step out to watch the band. I mean...
Yeah.
If you're there and you're paying your money, you're entitled to turn your back on a match. I know it's frustrating if you're a pure fan, but you're entitled to it.
Yeah, look, I don't know how you change it, or as you say, I don't know, is there some sort of a happy medium? It does grate with you that, you know, there are going to be people who have been to a dozen tip matches, a dozen Kilkenny matches more this year, who may struggle to get there. I mean, some people will tell you, oh, you'll always find a way if you want them bad enough, but it's all well enough, you know, Mick and Johnny and they know such and such, and they're able to pull a stroke for you, or they'll pull in a favour for you. But some people just, you know, keep themselves to themselves. They don't have all those connections, and they genuinely mightn't be able to come up with tickets. And I just think there is ways and means that the whole system can be improved, you'd imagine, somehow or another.
It seems to be the focus is obviously very much on the €90 for the stand tickets. You can still get into the Hill for 45, and I know that some of the tickets actually went on sale today on the GAA website as well, which seems a bit strange, actually, because most of it goes around the clubs, and you get two tickets each for every club, and then the two counties playing get the vast bulk of tickets. But to see them on sale, the general public.
Yeah, because I actually only asked the question this morning. The company that I work for in my day job at the moment, we would own the Kilkenny People newspaper. We'd also own two newspapers in Tip. And I just actually asked Brian Keyes, our editor in the Kilkenny People. I was saying, how hard are tickets to come across this year? Are they easily enough got? And Brian had said, no, look, they're hard enough to be got at the moment as well. Because, I mean, 3 years in Kilkenny hurling is a famine, you know. So there's a big buzz back around the place. We see it. We're putting together supplements there for the last week or so to go into both papers, and there just seems to be more renewed vigour again. You know, you can get sick of success, if that seems a ridiculous point to say, but I suppose more become accustomed to it, and there's a buzz back around the place again. So I was surprised to see tickets going on general sale. Yeah.
Just some of the texts. I'm a Kilkenny supporter who bought 2 adult and 3 juvenile season tickets in January and received my All Ireland tickets during the week. It brought my total spend of the year supporting Kilkenny to €1,390. How much of that gets back to my club, Mick and Kilkenny? I couldn't tell you that, actually, Mick. We're a family living in Wexford, but I have Tip blood flowing through our veins. We've supported both teams this year and I've gone to all games. We're a family of 6, and for us to go to the All-Ireland costs us €540. Absolutely scandalous, it says. All my kids are over 16, but in school, college, so costs is down to the parents. There's another comment, but I'm not going to read that one out. But in terms then of, you can't really blame the GAA in terms of trying to, because they'll say to that this money filters down through its organisation, through its grassroots level, being a volunteer organisation. So the money that they're paying for tickets surely is going filtering down to your clubs and to county boards.
Yeah, you'd imagine that that's certainly the way it's supposed to operate, and it is the way it operates, let's be fair. You know, they are very, very good in that sense. I suppose what people will see, without going into the nitty gritty and just looking at things on the surface, what people will see again is 40 by the time substitutions are made, amateur players out on the field giving absolutely everything, putting on this spectacle. And for the fella who lines the pitch at his local club 12 months of the year to go and watch his neighbour from down the road, is going to cost him and his family, what did we say there, €500. You know, that's the way rather than logically, in the way that you are.
I can vouch for that, because my father did it for Robert Emmett's GAA club for years. He lined the pitch, whatever, okay? He was a Galway man. Now, it was easier to get tickets back in those days, thankfully. But yeah, I know, I hear what you're saying. But that's the ethos, isn't it? It's amateur game, amateur players. You know, a manager's suggestion is that they get paid. But it's a volunteer organisation, and you know, unlike, say, a game like cricket, which is a hidden sport, I mean literally a hidden sport, it's actually hidden behind housing estates. you go to any small town in Ireland and there's a GAA club at the end of it. I mean, that's the essence of the GAA, isn't it?
There is, and again, as you say, I suppose, if they gave, I suppose if they were able to give an exact definition of the extra revenue that's going to be raised from this €10 increase,
and that's probably what they should be doing, saying, look, this is what we're taking in, this is where it's going.
From a PR point of view, that would probably have been a slightly better way to go about it. But look, at the end of the day, it's going to be all hot air. The prices have gone up, and what's to say the prices won't go up again?
Well, they say they won't. So that's part of their ethos. They're saying there's no immediate increase in coming up, especially in 2020 and maybe in the short term beyond that. Anyway, that's for Sunday, the All-Ireland final. It's going to be a mighty game, Tipperary against Kilkenny. You can follow it, of course, across all platforms on RTE. We're going to talk about Captain Slow, Bryson DeChambeau, and slow play of golf after these.
Text 51552.
Game on. Weekdays from 6.
And Tara's coming up at 7 o'clock until 7. It's Game On with John Kenny in for Hugh Cahill. For the last couple of minutes, we're going to talk about slow play in golf. You're standing out there in the pouring rain. There's a four ball in front of you and there's a guy on the green. You're going, for God's sake, put the ball in the hole. Bryson DeChambeau has been accused of slow play. We've seen it at the Northern Trust Open at the weekend in New Jersey, a tournament won by Patrick Reed. DeChambeau in particular on two holes, one where he was measuring up a putt of around 15 feet. It took him forever, about 2.5 minutes, and he eventually missed the putt. Afterwards, DeChambeau had this to say.
Here's the thing, guys. There's three other people playing out there, and I'm not the only one out there playing golf, right? Is that correct? So, for example, let me give you one example, guys. Jason Day and Stevie Williams. I played with him at WGC, right? Guess how long it took us to play that round, the third round. Does anyone know? Might want to go check that out, because we were on their tail every single hole playing with Jason Day and Stevie. A lot of it's the caddies. A lot of it's the other players. They don't care about walking fast. I play a different way out there. I take my 40 seconds that is allotted, sometimes over, absolutely. Totally agree. It's maybe 5% of the time, but I'll tell you that it's really kind of unfortunate the way it's perceived, because there's a lot of other guys that take a lot of time. They don't talk about this matter. And for me personally, it is an attack, and it's something that is not me whatsoever. People don't realize the harm that they're doing to the individuals. And look, this is about playing golf, right? I'm trying to enjoy my time out there and play golf in the best way possible. Yet I'm sprinting in between every single shot because sometimes playing partners and caddies don't walk at the necessary speed that they need to. Because this is a four-person job when we're talking about this. If you catch me out at my normal golf course, I'll be playing in 2.5 hours. I hate playing golf. I absolutely hate it. I love competition. It's the most fun thing in the world for me. But when people start talking to me about slow play and how I'm killing the game, I'm doing this and that to the game, that is complete and utter you-know-what.
Bryson DeChambeau there. Greg Allen joins the studio. Gary Murphy is on holidays. I know I saw your tweet during the week, Greg, about Bryson DeChambeau saying he was a slow player as an amateur, and now he's carried it on to the professional game. And the second point of the tweet was that the broadcasters are calling him the scientist, which kind of says, OK, well, if you've got to be slow, we'll call him something, and it justifies it.
I think the scientist moniker that's been placed on him has given him some sort of justification that he can analyse everything, you know, to the nth degree and go way beyond what's allowed for a shot to be played in professional golf, which is 40 seconds in general play, 50 seconds for the first person to play. So clearly, you know, he breaks that rule far more than 5% of the time. And I think he knows that, because subsequent to that, I won't call it a rant, but that soliloquy at the press conference, he posted on Instagram something totally different. And I think it might have been the Bryson DeChambeau image rights department or image protection department who said, Bryson, that wasn't the smartest thing to say. Look at the video. You can see that you're taking more than 2 minutes to line up a putt. And it wasn't even 15 feet, maybe 10 feet.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think he came out with this Instagram post, which I think might have been written by him, although it could be written by direction of Bryson DeChamo, image department.
I'm
constantly trying to improve. I'll do my very best to improve my pace. Golf is my passion and livelihood. It's my responsibility to help improve the game to be more enjoyable for all. Pace of play has been an issue for golf at all levels for a long time. I'm committed to being part of the solution, not the problem. So that's a bit of a different tone. So
because
clearly,
in this instance here, with that clip we just played there, he's starting to blame other players. He's starting to blame caddies. He's saying it's only 5% of the time. Nonsense.
Look, effectively, there's a rule that has not been implemented. And because it's never been really implemented properly, like there have been laughable implementations of this rule.
What is the rule?
It's 50 seconds for the first player, 40 seconds for every subsequent
player.
But
a subsequent to that is if they're called, is there a shot penalty?
There's
or is after, a warning for us,
no, there should be a shot penalty. There's firstly a warning, but yeah, it's never been implemented, the shot penalty, except for Guan Tianlang, a 14-year-old Chinese player at the Masters in 2013, or Andrea Lee in the US Women's Open this year. Not exactly, you know, top flight names in the game. And clearly a 14-year-old Chinese boy getting the penalty at the Masters 6 years ago was just extraordinary, not laughable, you know, quite seriously wrong by all stretches of the imagination, when you can understand that there are so many players who are constantly flouting the rule. Now, maybe the 14-year-old Chinese boy back then, he's now 20, was breaking the rule. But why pick on him? So effectively, slow play, to bring it into its broader sense, rounds are heading towards 5.5 hours on the PGA Tour at the end of the field. Standard round would be 5 hours and 10. Even on the European Tour, which does have better implementation policies on timing of players, even to the point of having a tournament called the Shot Clock Masters last year, which was quite successful, where actually there was a shot clock over the players and you had to play your shot within that time or you did receive a penalty. It did work in making it, you know, clear to the players that this is a rule that is there. So the European Tour do have a way of implementing it. I believe the LPGA Tour also implement this rule and actually post, according to Bethan Nichols, a journalist for Golf Week, who tweeted it out this week, that they name and shame them in the locker room on the poster, that these are the players who have last week, you know, received penalties for slow play. But the PGA Tour are now addressing the issue. They're going to use ShotLink, which is their GPS tracker of players, to define the players who are responsible. How they're going to implement it remains difficult to understand.
This is a problem, though, for the broadcasters too. And we saw it with Holmes, I think it was last year, where they actually cut away from the final round because they had, I think, a Love Island or something coming up. Seriously, because they were thinking, okay, if we, you know, let this go on and watch Holmes play a shot that takes him, you know, 2.5 minutes, they're going to lose the audience for the. And they cut away from the final round of a tournament. You know, playing 5.5 hours is just not on, especially for the broadcast.
Well, JB Holmes, I think that might have been in the San Diego Open last year, where he was in the final or second from last match out, and he was thinking about going for the 18th green, a par 5 over water, or whether he wouldn't. So it took 3 minutes for him to play the shot, and eventually he laid up. And it was agonizingly difficult to watch, if you were watching on television, for a director of the programme who clearly only has 2 matches out on the golf course. Yeah. He had nothing to cut away to. So this was on television. He didn't have any other action to go to. It was a particularly, you know, obvious case of an untenable situation with regard to slow play. Now, that got a lot of attention. JB Holmes got more attention at the Open Championship in Portrush because he played with Brooks Koepka. In fairness to Brooks Koepka, people, I think, are wrongly defining him as being dull. He may not be the most enthusiastic person after winning a tournament or winning a championship. He just seems to win majors and very big tournaments, and it doesn't seem to mean a huge amount to him. So people misinterpret that as being someone who doesn't have a whole lot to say. He is a very strong spokesman for the game, especially on this issue, because he does what it says in the tin. He plays quickly. He plays within the time allowed. And I mean, he tapped his watch very clearly, showing to the referee playing alongside JB Holmes in Port Rush, you got to do something about this. This incident coming on the back of JB Holmes in Port Rush is good for the overall impetus that's now being generated behind doing something about this.
Rory McIlroy, will the PGA do anything about
it? They will, I think, now. Yeah. But they're almost like shamed into doing something because it's taken these instances back to back, you know, and two serial offenders, Bryson DeChambeau and JB Holmes. And let's throw Jason Day in the mix with that as well, a former world number one, who said, I think it was the year just before the 2018 season, that if he has to back away from a shot five times to get it right before he steps into the shot, he will. So just the fact that there is a penalty that's not imposed, it's like having, you know, speed signs on a road, but there's never any speed trap. You're not going to always adhere to the speed signs if you know that there's no speed trap there to actually act as a deterrent.
Yeah. Shane, are you a golfer?
No, definitely not. Very much the layman. But just listening to it, I suppose, yeah, the two things that strike me, you're after putting it in a driving point of view. I suppose I was just thinking, like, imagine a game of football and if somebody handles the ball, you're told, don't handle the ball again, but play on. Like, it just seems crazy, so it does. And well, I'm waiting to play like everybody else. Obviously, I was glued to the Shane Lowry coverage on the two final days, and I mean watching JB Holmes. Oh my God, you'd be pulling, if I had here, I'd be pulling it out. You know, it is. You would love to see something done about it from a viewer's perspective. As I say, I'm talking completely as a layman, but it's he's hard to watch, all right. You know,
there are players who've done things about it. Keegan Bradley was notoriously slow, and he's one of the smarter, more sort of responsible type of players. If you speak to him, he's very articulate. He decided that it was looking ridiculous that he had this pre-shot routine where he kept backing away. So he tried his very, very best to do something about it. And in fairness, he is quicker than he used to be. So look, it's just a matter of changing routines. And part of the problem here are the psychologists who tell the players you're not to take the shot until you're ready. Well, there's a rule
when it's ready. Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes that's 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. So as we saw with a putt. So as much as Bryson DeChambeau might want to make a case about the fact that, you know, when you're walking down the fairway and because he hits the ball very far, he has to wait until he gets to his ball on the green, 2.5 minutes for a putt is just not
ridiculous.
Acceptable.
We only have 2 minutes left ourselves here. Just a quick word about McIlroy at the weekend. He was in contention. The Northern Trust fell away a little.
No, I think Rory McIlroy did not play very well last week. He made a ton of bogeys, made a ton of birdies. So it means that his putting in his short game is pretty good because he retrieved a lot of his long game issues with his short game. So he's been working this week, heading into the BMW Championship in Chicago, trying to sort out what's called a two-way miss, which is a golfer's nightmare. If a golfer has a one-way miss, at least you know it's going left the whole time, so you might be able to aim out to the right. But if you've got a two-way miss going on, you can't aim out to the right if the two-way miss problem comes out to be one that goes even further right. So he's trying to sort that out at the moment. He's had this issue before and he just has to sort it out.
Sure. Is Shane playing this weekend?
Yes, he is. He's 25th in the FedEx Cup rankings. He's got to stay in that top 30 to make it to the Tour Championship. Fingers crossed. He played okay last week considering it was first time back.
Yeah, first time out. Yeah. What did you make to his round? Or his four rounds?
He just had a very bad final round, but he was doing okay for 3 days. And the thing is, like, it's his first...
I think it was important for him to make the cut, wasn't it? That was very important.
Yes,
just to keep that kind of
momentum
going.
He wants to stay in that top 30 and he just has to make sure that he has a good week this week, get into that top 30, make it to the Tour Championship and finish the season off in terms of his American season on a high. And then he goes to Europe and hopefully will be at Wentworth for the PGA Championship, a course he absolutely loved, and he might be a factor in September in that.
Okay, hopefully he will. Thanks, Greg. Thanks to Shane for dropping in. By the way, Dundalk have named their team to play Slovan Bratislava, kicking off at 8 o'clock tonight. So it's Rogers in goal. Give me the team as has given it to me. Sean Gannon, Chris Shields, Duffy, Mountney plays tonight. Patrick Hooban actually captains the side from striker because their normal captain, Brian Gartland, is on the bench. Jamie McGrath gets a start alongside Dane Massey will play at fullback. Ronan Murray starts, Danny Cleary and Andy Boyle will also play, the experienced central defender. That's just about it. Tara Stewart is next. Hope you've enjoyed Game On. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm John Kenny. Till the next time we meet, bye for now.
Game On. On 2FM. Weekdays from 6.